Today, we're going to talk about awards. And unusually, I've done some research and I have some facts and figures here, which I've got from the internet. So they're definitely correct.
And what might be nice is that on the basis I have not done any research, do not have facts and figures, I can probably speak as a layman, as a viewer, and someone who's a little bit of experience in this, and what we think of them in general.
Yeah, I think my starting point would be to be a bit sniffy. I've always been a little bit unbothered by awards. But actually, when I started doing the research and looking at A, how much money it generates to the economy, and B, just how much it can increase a person's visibility and their sales, kind of starts to make an awful lot of sense.
Good day, all. Welcome to Riding the Showbiz Wave with myself, John Fowler.
And me, Drew Masters.
This week, we're going to touch on awards, gongs, accolades in this wonderful business. Yeah, I find timing is very interesting. In the UK, in the music industry, somewhat uniquely, we exist in the first part of the year, which really jumpstarts the market from the very slow January activity. And I've always viewed that as very important. And it reminds people that what we've been doing, working very hard on. The rest of the awards, I'm pretty sure, are mostly back end of the year, the Actors Awards and the big music awards.
They're all sort of all over the place, aren't they?
The Oscars this spring.
I always think this feels like awards season for me because I'm a BAFTA member and so I get all the BAFTA films through to start watching. And so this feels like, you know, the beginning of awards season, then we vote through the winter and then the awards are in the spring. Yeah, there's sort of things going on all the time. And I think deliberately so because they plan not to clash with each other.
In a rather sort of lighthearted, more whimsical way, my reflections on the Brit Awards especially, which I have been to many over the years, some phenomenally historical ones, but certainly it was normally first week of February. I think it probably still is. And in the music industry, traditionally, we would have a very, very busy December, a very heavy December, and the good old traditional ways of excess partying. And so people came back to work in January swearing that they wouldn't have a drink until the Brits.
Right.
And so the Brits became a very, very lively evening, people letting off steam. Many people tried that 6-week period, 5 or 6 week period. Many failed, myself included. But, you know, some did use it as the date to aim for.
Hey, it's funny, the Brits was much derided by the press and public, I would say, for early on, for, with, you know, some of those terrible...
Well, they got it so wrong. They got it so wrong, you know, 80s and some of the early 90s. But then, of course, it became a very serious marketing tool.
Yeah.
I mean, really, really serious.
It became really slick. And, you know, when James Corden took over, I assume he's not still doing it. I haven't seen it. And is it still televised?
Yeah, it is. And that's another big deal. It's an ITV big viewing audience, very big sponsors. I think it's MasterCard. Big brands are sponsoring, getting involved. The red carpet is, again, another big deal. And that's also very important about these award shows. And we'd laugh at the red carpet as something that people do. But it's hugely important. I've worked behind the scenes where the most important part of the evening is getting the red carpet right so that you nick the following day's press, which is why you see the more daring outfits of these young, beautiful starlets. And you know, going to great lengths to get it right.
Well, I've got some numbers here, and forgetting just the economic impact, but just looking at career impact on people. So if you get an Oscar, I mean, obviously the Oscars are sort of pinnacle of acting awards. I think, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. They get, on average, 20 to 60% pay boost after winning. Halle Berry famously said that she went from $118,750 per role to $6.5 million per role after winning an Oscar. That's pretty extraordinary. I think we want to talk about the Mercury Prize because that just happened. And Elbow, very famous band, 700% sales increase.
Didn't that Guy Garvey, the lead singer, I think he, didn't he say it was the most important?
He said, I can quote from the internet, so it's definitely correct, best thing that ever happened to us.
There we are. That's best thing that ever happened was winning that award.
Although I also have him quoted in quotes saying, quite literally the best thing that has ever happened to us. So one of those, yeah, it's one of those.
Well, Guy, you need to make your mind up, mate.
I mean, which is it?
And what do your wife and kids think of that? Anyway, moving on. But no, the Mercury, again, it's so, so important. And this is a million miles away from the Oscars. And they are really a million miles apart.
Yeah, completely.
In terms of what they mean. But from my perspective, and I enjoy the Mercury Awards because I don't know who curates or decides. I don't even know what criteria it's based on getting on the Mercury long list and then short list. But it is the more eclectic, and I don't even think you need to be independently released, although I'm sure most of them are. Anyway, it's great snapshot, and it's great for the bands who aren't at that level, though I believe this year's winner, Sam Fender, who's a pretty famous dude anyway. I'm sorry, yeah. It can't be for those under the radar.
Yeah, I wonder what swung those decisions. I mean, having sat on juries for awards, I know that often the results look quite considered, if you like, in terms of, you know, like one film will win loads of awards for different disciplines within it, or certain things seem to be incredibly popular in a certain year. But when you're in that jury room, you know, it's very isolated. It's actually very, you are focusing on just that one thing. And so actually you won't be considering because you won't know who else, you don't know what's shortlisted for a different award. So, you know,
are you suggesting that it actually might be legitimate?
I'm suggesting it might actually be legitimate.
I think it's
there will be hype though around things. So for example, I haven't done any research into this and I meant to before we started, but I have this gut feeling that Sinners is going to do really, really well this award season. May have already done well for all in it. There's something about that film that just works. It's just really, really good. And I've got feeling it's going to pick up a lot of awards. It's a gut feeling. And I guess it's about partly the hype around the film and the conversations that people are having around the film. And those will be taken in to those jury rooms where they decide who's getting the awards.
I think that our listener hopefully will be interested in the composition, the makeup of the lists and how you get nominated. Well, it is a combination of very decent product. You know, you have to have produced something pretty special, certainly in the music awards, because as you well know, in the UK, the industry is incredibly close-knit, really very critical, and you know, you can't afford not to be with the cool guys.
So interestingly, with awards, you have to be nominated and someone has to nominate you. So certainly for the stuff I do in TV, it will be the production company. It could be myself, but it probably won't be. Yeah, I think it looks a bit cheesy if you submit your own nomination. It's usually production company or the producer. And I'm guessing that's true throughout music. I mean, with music, it's interesting because, you know, we've talked about Ray a million times. I mean, Ray is an independent artist. So who is putting her nominations forward? Is it her management? Presumably she's got her own label. I guess they're doing it themselves. And actually, I'll answer that. So because I know about this, because I'm on the Ivors Academy board, I know for the Ivor Novellos, certainly for the honours, those are peer suggested. So we will, you know, so when Ray got an honour for services to the music industry, that was suggested by people within the industry to us. And we got a short list of people or a long list and then narrowed it down to the people we thought should be honoured.
So the Brits is definitely a committee, and it's a committee made up of industry professionals. And
so do they receive nominations from people, or do people lobby, or do they literally just look at...
I should know. I think it's a combination of...
Maybe our listener will know and they can let us know. That'd be really helpful.
Being lobbied. But one of my observations about awards in general, and it's a challenge, I think, because it really just makes the bigger stars even bigger. You know, there is not a very well subscribed and incredibly well promoted award for the best newcomer and new music. New music needs much more, organization, it needs much more curating, it needs much more quality control. And that's going to be a challenge, because the next 10 years you really talented and really brilliant bands, artists will miss out, and we all know why. Twas ever thus to a certain extent, but you know, there is so much average music, average input, average content flying around.
But I mean, I guess, you know, it's the nature of any industry, isn't it? Once you become, I mean, I'm not suggesting that Taylor Swift's new album isn't fabulous, but once you get to that level, your album generates so much hype and so much interest that it is inevitable that you'll get millions and millions of streams regardless of what it is you put out.
I don't know. I mean, let's compare it very, very off the top of my head with elite sport, you know, professional, you know, Premiership football. There's no way anyone who isn't playing at the top of that sport isn't there because of absolutely, they are the most skillful athletes in that business. And I think the same of, you know, you could say the same of F1. Nobody gets to the top of F1 but by mistake, you know. But again, I think that it's a corporate business. It's a very, very lucrative business. And that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I mean, I was just looking through my list of facts to see if I could see how much it costs. And I can't see it here, but I did have a figure on how much studios pay to promote their stars that they're putting forwards for the Oscars. It's a lot of money. I can tell you that. And we know that, you know, you don't get an Oscar without taking out full page ad in Variety, Hollywood Reporter.
Well, that's right. It's a big cycle of spend. There's an old-fashioned statistic that if your project, movie, film costs $100 million, you should be spending the same on marketing, promotion, everything else. So I think you have to understand it. The big are going to get bigger. And I saw, I watched with great, great interest and joy the MTV Awards 2025, about a month or so ago. We're now coming towards autumn in the UK, which I loved. I loved because it was, I thought it was quite poppy, and I love my pop music. I love my party music. I also love a bit of rock. Anyway, I loved it because it was the usual. It was Sabrina, or it was Lola, or it was a lot of beautiful, you know, pop artists. I'm really looking well, and it's a great TV show. Let's not forget. Tons is poured into this TV show, this TV event. But what I thought was also really interesting, Ricky Martin did a medley, and so did Mariah Carey. And I have to say, I do not know how old Ricky Martin is, but boy, he looked great, I have to say. And it was really entertaining, and I have to say, I take my hat off to whoever organized that. And maybe he's got a tour on sale, I don't know. But it was, you know, I do enjoy the televised event, I must admit.
Fantastic. And so I'm just looking at some of the numbers on the Mercury Prize. I mean, it says here on the internet, a £55.5 million financial return to the UK economy from £6 million invested. So that's quite a good return for the economy and for the government on that. But there are also a lot of people saying that it's got an identity crisis and that it's anti-commercial, and that means it's struggling to get commercial sponsors.
I think a couple of years ago, they lost their sponsor. In fact, I'm sure about that.
2024 was the first year without live performances due to sponsorship loss, says here.
So that's very interesting. So I think Ezra Collective may have won, or certainly nominated.
Yeah, so
listen to a lot of those.
It says on my fun facts page that they received an 859% sales boost after appearing or winning the Mercury Prize.
Okay.
So, I mean, that you'd take that, wouldn't you? It's a funny old number, but
I don't really know what that means. I suppose if they're selling one ticket, they're now selling
859.
Yeah.
James Blake, 2,500% Amazon sales increase. I mean, those are big numbers. That is, I mean, that propels you from, you know, being a very small indie artist. I mean, Ezra Collective, you know, they were probably known around playing their their stuff, suddenly they're everywhere. I mean, they were a highlight for me this summer, going to the Hyde Park BST Festival. Really enjoyed that. And they were really, you know, Stevie Wonder headlining. I mean, you can't argue with Stevie Wonder. But actually, Ezra Collective were who I really wanted to see. It was great fun. It was pretty much the only time I've danced in the last 10 years. Because it was actually illegal to not dance.
I'm it's not a guilty pleasure of mine, but I love watching them. I love seeing what goes into them. And if it goes a bit wrong, but they absolutely jumpstart, you know, people's careers on one level, and then I think at the highest level.
So here's a tricky question for you. But I'm going to make it anyway because that's what I do. If you have a range of awards available for someone that you're managing, how do you decide which ones you're going to go for in any given year?
As far as I know, and in my experience when I was managing, you know, you were invited to receive an award, or there was a likelihood you'd be nominated. Some awards shows are retrospective on the year, so you'll have best album, best single. I think the Brits does a lot of that. And
I mean, as a manager, do you get involved much in putting your acts forward for awards, or is it done by, you know, their record label or their?
It's really how much noise you can make, how successful you are. If you know, looking back on your year of success, and you'll know, you know. I mean, I can't imagine managers turning these things down, because as we've touched on, you know, in today's business, it's such a hugely crowded playground, that anything that you can give you an advantage that you can have in terms of mainstream press, you will grab, and you will do your very, very best. And that has been the way for many, many years. And it really does, you know, your statistics just say how important these things are.
Yeah, I was really surprised, I had to say. I think I can be a little bit judgy about people putting themselves forward, particularly in my industry, putting themselves forward for awards. There's no question that if you want bigger and better work, winning awards does help that.
And I would
give someone a starting point to say, look, this person's won, you know, four awards. They must be good. Must be doing something right.
Well, the more observant of you, you will know that my cohort friend sitting opposite me is an award winner, and a very reputable award as well. So whatever he's saying, just bear in mind that he's been up there to receive a BAFTA.
I actually was asked by one of my productions this year to make a submission for another award, and I declined. I didn't feel that the work was, not that it wasn't good enough, but it wasn't something that I felt should be put forward for an award against what I know would be put forward. You could argue it was the wrong decision, but it was, it felt like the right thing to do at the time. I just didn't feel comfortable being put forward for that award at that time. And I think, you know, sometimes you have to make those decisions, make those calls for yourself if you don't feel, you know, I mean, as you say, I was lucky enough to win a BAFTA this year. I'm very happy with that. I don't need to put myself forward for anything else this year, maybe next year. But, you know, I want it to be for stuff that's really special. I want it to be for something really that's defining.
Well, other than the 25-yard breaststroke certificate that I have, I'm very pleased. I was never big on awards.
You got a cycling proficiency.
And a cycling proficiency badge as well. I wasn't a big award winner because actually that's one of the things. Being a manager, you should be heard and not seen, and I find it quite curious when I see fellow managers front and center on a sofa on telly, when and they can hold on that. The artist probably thinking, oh, that should be me.
Yeah.
I'm not a self-publicist, and I don't think I ever. I think there is a manager of the year. I'm sure there's a trade association or industry association that gives managers awards, which I have never, because I'm so ignorant of them, just as I had no interest. But it's more about, you know, I want my artist on that award show.
Good. Well, I think feel like we've done awards. I mean, we probably haven't done everything. I've got plenty more factoids, but I mean, I think if anyone has anything else they'd like us to discuss about this, and you know, leave some comments, and we'll
talk
about more. So another thing we were going to talk about today is spending money. And this comes off the back of my rather embarrassing piece to camera that I did, where I was talking about my tip of not spending money at the early stages of your career. Obviously, it's impossible to spend no money because there's always a subscription for something, or you have to own a phone to be able to post or whatever it is. But I mean, in general, there are people just everywhere trying to take money off you. But also just equipment is such a money pit. And it's so tempting just to, I mean, I do it, you know, buy a new microphone. I'm so tempted to get another microphone like the one you're using just so that it matches.
Because aesthetically.
Yeah, I just can't bear the fact that this is a really good microphone, but I just can't bear the fact it doesn't look the same as yours. I've managed to resist so far. No, I don't know how long that will last.
There's something wrong with you.
It's called GAS, gear accumulation syndrome. It is a known thing, and it's known definitely, especially amongst musicians.
If I may just explain to the listener, gear accumulation syndrome.
There's a great joke, which is how many guitars do you need? And the answer is one more.
Well, it's a very, very often used expression with golfers and cricketers. All the gear, no idea.
And but even if you've got an idea, you don't, you know, the amount of gear.
Yeah, you can't say you don't. And again, this is, you know, for people who are starting out, if you're just a singer, I'm going to say just a singer, you are solely responsible for singing or speaking. Don't overspend on microphones and audio equipment. You will know absolutely how you sound and whether it's a good one or not. And practice makes perfect. So no, I couldn't agree more. The notion of buying your way into a decent content is wrong.
No, I mean, it's actually really interesting looking at the equipment that Billie Eilish used when she started out, because she's got a very distinctive, you know, very lovely voice. And she was using a very cheap microphone when they started recording, and she's moved up now to one that she's moved up to probably the most expensive microphone. But can you hear the difference? Yeah, you can. I mean, it's marginal. There's some really great YouTube videos I've seen with microphone shootouts, and there's a guy in America who did a microphone shootout for recording guitar amps specifically. And there was a particular sound that he wanted, and he knew what microphones had been used, and he managed to source them from the original studio for, you know, that actually recorded these legendary albums that he loved. And he tried, I don't know, 20 microphones from $70 up to, I don't know, tens of thousands, and vintage, priceless microphones you can't even get close to. And yes, you can hear the difference, but it's not what you think. I think, you know, intuitively, I would look at all the different microphones. If you just look at a picture of 10 different microphones, from like a small pencil microphone like this one to, you know, a large condenser microphone like that, or, you know, a big tube microphone or a ribbon microphone, you'd think these all must sound so different. And the fascinating thing is they all sound really, really similar. And you're just getting this tiny incremental improvement in what it's capturing. And that's it. And obviously that extra little breathiness, the air around your voice, the depth and warmth could be just a little bit better. But it's tiny, tiny, tiny. And you can generally get very close by just putting one free plug-in over it that goes, you know, make it sound nicer. And so there is literally no point when you're starting out. That's not going to be the difference between you connecting with your audience and them hearing your voice properly the way it should be. And in fact, you know, there are some amazing records out there, still call them records, which were recorded on an iPhone, straight into an app, and mixed on the iPhone and been big hits.
So the bottom line, you know, entry level, you don't need to spend. You're probably holding in, or you have in your pocket, the best thing, your best friend. And the very, very sage advice about not spending your way into good content.
And also, this goes on to not spending money on services that you think are going to hype your your TikToks and things like that, because I think that there are a lot of people out there trying to, you know, they look, you know, they're creating content, they're telling you about how they managed to grow their followers from 1,000 to 10,000 to 100,000 in 6 months, and you could do it too. You know, write something in the comments and they'll send you a free PDF of how they've done it, but it's also getting you to go to the next stage and pay for a course. And, you know, yes, some of these tips might be useful, but all of those tips are going to be available for free. You know, we're giving you some of them, but there'll be other people out there giving others. And there are lots of people, you know, who've got great tips on how to get your content to go viral. But also, they don't apply to everyone. Sometimes, you know, if you're an authentic artist, you can't do those things. You've just got to post and be yourself and, you know, allow some of those posts to have 200 views. Don't worry about it.
Moving away from audio and sound and how critical that is and how you don't need to spend a lot of money, visually and image, and obviously there are so many augmentation apps that you can use. But when you see people asking for you to pay for the privilege of submitting work, you know, a book, you know, be very, very, very cautious about contract publishing. When someone asks you to pay for the first print run, or if a modeling agency, or they purport to be a modeling agency, and they want you to submit your images with a big fat check, bank transfer, I should say, just be very, very wary of those kind of operators. The industry is littered with, you know, charlatans who will take your money, say the right thing, make you feel good for 24 hours, and boom, they, you know, several hundred pounds later. And they're still out there, and they reappear and they keep operating, and it's pretty shameful.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, sometimes people are just deluded. They think they've got a lot of information to share with people. They think they've cracked the code on how to go viral, and so they genuinely believe, perhaps I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt, but, you know, probably genuinely believe a lot of the time that they do have something to share. And they may have some bits of wisdom to share, but, you know, ideally get that for free. That's what the internet's for.
It's a fascinating point that the internet has been a great leveler, because it's, you know, everyone has an opportunity. I, of course, have a very, very firm view on that I think it's incredibly damaging to think that everyone can do and participate in this industry, but they can't. You know, we've touched on this before. You've got to be better than good. You've got to be better than average. You've got to be excellent. You've got to think, how do I get into the elite squad of whatever it is that you are doing?
But I think that's what's great about it. I mean, that's what I love about TikTok, is that it's a showcase, and you've got your, you know, we've talked about it before, 10 seconds for me to connect with your audience. And it can be really unexpected. You know, sometimes you'll get someone sitting in their room with a guitar singing a song, and it does nothing, and you immediately know it's not for you, and you swipe it away. And then another time you'll get someone doing exactly the same thing, you know, sitting on their bed, end of their bed, strumming a guitar, singing, but for some reason there's something about it, it connects. And that's the great thing. It's totally democratizing.
I admire your faith in the internet and your appropriately termed democratization of it. But there is part of me that thinks it's a load of bollocks. And unfortunately, you know, too much really substandard music gets published. You know, there should be a very, very, and it's not good enough to say, well, if nobody likes you or follows you, you'll soon find out. It's too late by then. You're up. You're getting in the way of someone who's genuinely talented. I mean, goodness me, there must be so many. I use the example of TV broadcast and how many reality TV stars are now fully fledged broadcasters and presenters, using the term broadcaster very loosely, because they're not good broadcasters. They may be very lovable, incredibly charming and alluring, and had tons of followers. But I do sit that sometimes I think there are some really decent broadcasters out there who are thinking, how does this happen? A really well educated, studied broadcaster who knows what they're doing, knows what they're talking about.
You've been listening to Riding the Shapers Wave with me, Drew Masters.
And myself, John Fowler.
And tune in next time when we'll be talking about something else.